Der Raglanärmel dominiert. Sonnenblisé Empire-Tunikas schwingen über einfache Kreppkleider. Selbst der Petticoat schneidet er farbentreu aus
Familie Auer.
Und ein Kurz. Au! Was hat gegärmel? Vier Schritte nach hinten. So, und jetzt, wie findest du es?
Busch! Pass!
Franzen!
Und
ja, also, ja.
Und super kurzen, schlichten, weitaus geschnittenen Marineblauen.
Also, ja. Und, ja, geh. Und, ja, also, ja. Vier Schritte nach
ein
hinten.
Sichtbarer
so, und jetzt, wie findest du das?
Schultern wird gesmokt.
Das Modell links feiert im taillierten Bläser aus Wollkrepp mit Zatöck. Dazu gehört eine Abendhose.
Und, ja. Also, ja.
Aus
vier Schritte nach hinten. So, und jetzt, wie findest du es? Probieren ist Glückssache.
Ich sagte, probieren ist Glückssache.
Nächste Episode hören Sie heute in einer Woche. In der Zwischenzeit wartet die Familie Auer im Internet auf Ihren Besuch.
http://www.ping.at/thing/auer/
Kunstradio, Radiokunst.
Bei Kunstradio On Air begrüßt Sie Heidi Grundmann. Heute stellen wir Ihnen eine Kunstradioproduktion vor, die wir sofort in voller Länge, die unsere Sendezeit um einiges übersteigt, auch auf CD pressen ließen. Memetic Flash, After the Mutation, heißt diese Produktion, für die es uns gelungen ist, die bekannten kanadischen Medientheoretiker Arthur und Marie-Louise Croker sowie den britischen Komponisten und Performance-Künstler Robin Rimbaud, auch unter dem Namen Scanner, ein Begriff, zu uns nach Wien zu bringen. Hier im Funkhaus erarbeiteten Arthur und Marie-Louise Croker zusammen mit Scanner und dem jungen österreichischen Komponisten Rupert Huber eine sehr ungewöhnliche Komposition, die aus einigen Unterkapiteln besteht, in denen die eigenständigen Ansätze der einzelnen Beteiligten durchaus zum Tragen kommen. Im Booklet der CD Memetic Flash finden sich übrigens bisher unveröffentlichte Texte der Crokers, deren in aller Welt diskutierten Werke der Passagenverlag auf Deutsch herausbringen wird. Memetic Flash, After the Mutation, von und mit Arthur und Marie-Louise Croker, Robin Rimbaud, also known as Scanner, und Rupert Huber. Thank you.
We live now in a wormhole called...
Digital bodies.
Mimetic flesh.
Liquid sex.
Thank you.
We're sitting in a cyber coffee bar in San Francisco talking to Denise, a dancer by night and an artist by day. Denise is strikingly beautiful in a delicate, porcelain-like way. Tall, slim, with shoulder-length auburn hair, pierced nose, lip, and of course, a single eyebrow. At one point, she stood up, turned with her back toward us, displaying magnificent tattoos in the form of multicolored angel wings that went from her shoulder blades down to the small of her back, and the colors of the most exquisite medieval stained glass. And all this was cut by slender red scars splayed up and down her arms.
We ask about the scars, and she tells us about the latest SM scene in the city. It seems these days that in the really hip areas of San Francisco, the body cybernetic is out of date, unplugged from outlaw consciousness, and allowed to float off into the east, where the tech hype is only now getting underway. What's really new in San Francisco these days is some pain cut with a lot of healing. It's called slash and burn. Cut long slits down your arms or your legs. Really any flesh will do. Pour a bit of gasoline into the wounds, and then ignite the flesh. Now don't let it burn too long. We're not talking about flesh arson here. About burning down the whole barn of the body in the massive end of the century conflagration. But about pain with a recuperative purpose. As Denise explains, the real joy of inflicting pain on your own body lies in the deep pleasure of the healing process, and it's almost addictive. Cut the flesh, pour on gas, watch it burn, and then eagerly anticipate the long and slow healing powers of the body.
The body in San Francisco, then, is all about cynical feeling, intensifying the pain of the flesh to get one last hit of the angel wings of bodily healing.
Dead dogs and daddy under the Christmas tree. Merry Christmas. You can't go home again? That's definitely not true, because at Christmas you can always only go home. And sometimes it's real grisly. Stories of arthritic eyes and black spots and tumors and cancers and angina and heart attacks for the 12 very merry days of Christmas. Are stories of my best friend Doug who stabbed his daddy to death and left his body under the Christmas tree until March with Rex, the good old family dog. Now, Doug was schizoid, but so was his daddy. So I guess it was just a matter of time or circumstance to see which delusion won out. The Oedipus revenge or Merry Christmas, Dad, from hell. I'm out shopping with my mother, buying her a spanking new Toshiba TV with closed captioning and digital ports galore for a happy multimedia future. And she suddenly says, "Did you see the manager of the store?" Well, a few weeks ago, his wife went down to the highway and threw herself in front of a transport truck, left three children. Sort of sad, I guess. This is just after we drove by the house of the family doctor, the one who had acid thrown on his face during a happy Yuletide season past by an unhappy patient hiding in the back of his car after a house call. And it was just after our next-door neighbor of many years said goodnight to his wife, had a last drink with the boys down at the Legion Hall, turned on all the lights in the house, went into the basement, and blew his head off with a .410 double-barreled shotgun. 3 months later, his oldest son, with whom he never had good relations anyway, did the very same thing. Drove his girlfriend to work. Getting out of the car, she said, "See you later." He said, "Maybe." And he was right. Because on the same day, he killed himself over his daddy's grave. Same gun, different shells.
Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year!
Yeah. some curious things. Goose says that anxiety is about confronting nothingness.
Prince Chavos was
I don't
really
bother to think that one through.
Lunchtime crowd.
But Pete Heidegger's insight directly to my stomach neurons. Probably get a quick take of what my eating intelligence has to say about the relationship between anxiety and nothingness.
Essay on anxiety.
Now, crazy ass seagulls, pure Clorox white, are circling in the air. Cheeseburgers are being lazily jumped all around me. The rich Java crowd has that edge of late morning tiredness and lunchtime happiness. And I know, I just know that Heidegger's wrong. But it's not nothingness that people are afraid of, at least the California crowd down in New York do. But just the opposite. What really hardwires the anxiety gene directly into the California cellular structure isn't nothingness, but hyperactivity. Always having something to do, like an ulcerator coming down heavy into the mind. And your body is rattled tight, can't walk except at a trot. With face muscles pulled taut, and running shoes with your wearing clothes. You don't really want to wear it. You're on the run, baby run treadmill. The high tech street level display gym, speeding to nowhere. The time is money, appearance is everything. And you just can't afford to miss that nifty power walk up and down the San Francisco Bay. Coco's dead souls, as 90s repressed young professionals. And not just the Silicon boys and girls either, but everyone in San Francisco has got into the act. The suits on Market Street put on hypermedia flash to auto-dock every morning at their cyber workstations. Homeless guys along the bay, new RDH military-style kinesthetics, complete with one-armed push-ups with legs suspended, 3 feet off the air in park fencing. The ferry buildings have fast vectors of cyber-laws, rolling in for the nighttime free roll by Marin County. And there's not a word spoken here that's not an ode to promotional culture in the capital. But then again, maybe Idem is wrong. Maybe the anxious, self-righteous pitch of velocity, running from nothingness in, really loving it. Now, Rich Jam House is about as close to Heidegger's nothingness as she's going to get in the sight of God's screening. It's the kind of place where the bay is on your mind, the sun's in your skin. You're sitting there with a bud and a cheeseburger, and your cool shades tucked in tight. But your thoughts have drifted away to that quiet place we all have inside us, where the horizon narrows down to a beautiful circle, where life, love, worries, and just plain dying lunchtime things vector together into a forget-me-not kind of day. Now, Heidegger could have just done some running at Rich Jabba's. I'm pretty sure that he would rethink his concept of nothingness. And why? Because in California, the hypermedia body, the digital body, has already blasted into through to the other side of nothingness. It's had a nervous breakthrough. It's gone over to that crazy edge of incontinent energy, cut with a low earthquake hysteria. Or what's really desirable is panic anxiety. That comes from riding the abyss, just between hyper-stress and flat-ass inertia. Lazy days are here again. I'm okay, and so are you. As long as you're not in Sandpoint, hedonism San Francisco style. In California, nobody fears nothingness. It's what people eat for lunch. And in San Francisco, they get it every day at the price of a true great cheeseburger. Thank you.
Das war ein Teil der Produktion Memetic Flesh – After the Mutation von und mit Arthur und Marie-Louise Kroker, Robin Rimbaud, also known as Scanner, und Rupert Huber. Mitgewirkt haben Akemi Takea und Hannes Strobel, Technik Hertha Schumlitsch und Gerhard Wiese. Memetic Flesh ist in der Edition Kunstradio auf CD erschienen. Im Booklet der CD finden sich bisher unveröffentlichte englische Texte der beiden kanadischen Medientheoretiker Arthur und Marie-Louise Kroker, deren heiß diskutierte Werke ab Herbst dieses Jahres vom Passagenverlag auf Deutsch herausgebracht werden. Die CD Memetic Flesh – After the Mutation können Sie beim Kunstradio bestellen. Kunstradio, Argentinierstraße 30a, A1040 Wien. E-Mail kunstradio@thing.or.at.